Welcome to FinTech Daydreaming, the podcast that dives into the world of banking technologies and the ever-changing landscape of FinTech companies. We bring you real-life examples from global and local thought leaders, as well as experts working within the financial industry, and seek out the best stories from the front lines of financial services innovation, where dreams of industry pioneers meet reality. Hosted by Paul Krogdahl and Vinlis Sonthu. This is FinTech Daydreaming.
Hello and welcome to another episode of FinTech Daydreaming. This time of the month, it means one thing. We are again talking about Nordic FinTech highlights. Your show where we look at what's been happening in the previous month, especially here in the Nordics, in the FinTech space, and then try to widen the perspective a little bit by discussing some selected stories from the newsletter by the Helsinki FinTech Farm. With that being said, my name is Ville Sointu, as you know, and I'm always joined by my good friend and co-pilot, Paul Krogdahl, and then, of course, for these episodes, Jan Salmien. So how are you guys, Paul?
I'm good, as always, Ville. Another week, another exciting journey of roller coaster rides in the fintech world here in the Nordics. Lots of interesting things to be talking about, lots of highlights, lots of news. I'm good. Although I have to probably admit now that we're, what is it, two, three months into the year, all of my New Year's resolutions, I think they've generally fallen to the wayside. There was the dry January. Can we push it into a dry year? Nah. I mean, you and I, Ville, we broke that completely over the weekend anyway, right?
Yeah,
and yeah. And then the other one was the gym. I'm still got a gym membership. I am still going to the gym, just maybe not as frequently as I was at the beginning. But the willpower is there still, and I will keep going. Maybe deciding to go to the gym early in the morning was a bad move, but we'll see how it continues for the rest of the year. But, you know, let's just hope that the fintech scene in the Nordics goes better this year than my desire to go to the gym.
Well, at least you're following the trends, right? So whenever you go to the gym in the beginning of the year, it's very crowded, but all you have to do is wait until February and everybody's gone again. So, but at least you're keeping with the principle of at least trying in the future as well. So let's see how that works out. But Janne, so how has been February and the year so far treating you?
It's been quite good. I'm happy that the gym isn't that crowded anymore, so it's better to go there myself. And 2024, this is finally the year when I can see practically that open banking is improving my life.
Oh wow! Do tell us more.
Yeah. So as you remember last episode when we were talking about Danske Bank, I was mentioning that they're still lacking the feature that business customers could check their bank account balance with a mobile device. Mm-hmm. And it was already actually a few years ago when I was thinking that maybe I can solve this problem with some, you know, open banking solution. I can add my business account to a multi-banking app such as Revolut. And the issue has been there that even though they have pretty decent banking connections, it's only on the consumer side. And already back then I discovered this business banking app called Finom. It's a Dutch fintech company. And back then they didn't have the Nordic banks yet. But actually last week when I was reading fintech news, I noticed that they have been raising a lot of funding. So the company came back to my mind. So I checked that, hey, do they happen to have Danske Bank nowadays? And yeah, they have the Klarna APIs. Mm-hmm. And now I'm able to put my business account into the Finom app. So thank you, PSD2 and Finom and Klarna APIs for making my life a little bit less miserable.
Fantastic. It's actually quite in line with what I'm hearing from the market as well. Last week I was in the Finovet conference in London, and a lot of people were talking about the fact that it really took like 5 years for open banking to start producing real value, something we can actually use on our day-to-day basis. And now I'm hearing even the business parts of the of this value proposition is kind of starting to bear fruit even here in Finland. So yeah, fantastic news. So, Paul, what do you think about the state of open banking?
You know my view. Open banking to me is an underlying technology that's driving wider business capabilities around the space of embedded finance, the move towards the wider platformification of the banking industry. So open banking to me has always been a small step in a larger journey and will continue to be so. But it's promising to see this moving and continuing to move. And I do strongly believe that this year is going to be the year where we see a fundamental growth of embedded finance. But I also think it's going to be hidden into other elements like digital wallets and so forth. So we need to be a little bit wider-eyed on how we look at the journey from open banking PSD2 into PSD3 as it will come, etc., and how the banks and the non-bank organizations will collaborate to drive real, true value for the consumers going forwards.
Yeah, and one thing is for sure, we will continue to have conversations about whether open banking and embedded finance are different or the same thing or something in between. Depends on who you talk to. These are completely separate topics, so they are absolutely the same. So we will not get into that conversation today, because today we want to talk about what is happening in the Nordic fintech scene and what's been the top of mind news in February. But before we get to all of that goodness, of course, we cannot ignore our tradition of asking our guest for a joke. So Janne, do you have a fintech related joke for the audience today?
Yes, I have an utterly bad joke.
Excellent, go for it.
So a little bit like a continuation to the same topic as last joke, but why did the AML department hire an alligator wearing a vest?
It's getting very abstract, isn't it?
Very specific, but yes, please do tell us.
They were lacking an investigator.
Oh, dear Lord. Okay. Thank you, Jan, I guess, for that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, good. Now that we have partially recovered from that, let's move on. So Janne, as I promised, what are the top of mind headlines for February that we can talk about?
Yeah, so if we traditionally start from funding, so we can see some cheering up in the scene, nothing too tremendous, but for instance, Lunar, they're raising fairly big money on the late VC side. So they're clearly back on track, big fintechs raising big money, big expansion. That's what we were used to see a few years ago. Now it's been a bit more quiet, but looks promising. Also on the RegTech side, there were two companies, Spectre and Meo, which were raising funding. Pretty decent on that side. On the partnership side, we can see that both Visa and MasterCard are forming various partnerships with the Nordic fintech companies. So they're clearly in the game. Account-to-account payments are really trending this month. We'll talk about them a bit later today. And then of course, quite much we have seen the Q4 results from the banking side. It's pretty solid on that area of financing. So I think that's also a positive thing for the fintech companies who are working with the banks as well.
Yes, we did see the major Nordic banks. Practically, I guess all of them gave their reports. Yeah. It was just last week, I think I agree. The looks like it's still good times for most of the banks, at least, and that's a positive sign, because usually that means that this trickles down to the fintech industry as well. When the banks are doing well, there's also much more activity going on in terms of developing new things and finding new partnerships. So I think that's a overall positive thing.
But yes, based on that, Villa, you're absolutely right. I mean, all of the banks in the Nordics have shown good results and profit. If we go back to the discussion that we had in our last episode with Ewan, and we think about a little bit like you said, you know, it trickles down to the fintechs. At the same time, it makes me wonder as to whether the banks are just going to take that money and sit on it and see it as a rainy day fund, or they're going to take that money and say, now is the time for us to deal with some of those modernization issues that we've had on the back burner for so long. And maybe now is the time to engage with some of the vendors and the fintechs, et cetera, to help us to modernize quickly and in a appropriate manner whilst we still have some additional cash flow sitting in the bank. It's going to be interesting to see how the banks in the Nordics take advantage of this extra cash, because they can turn it into an advantage, a good advantage, or they could just sit on it and say, well, if things turn bad, then we've got some money in the back pocket, which personally, I don't think it's necessarily the best approach.
I think we're going to see different banks taking different approaches, as you would expect. And the reason for that, I fundamentally believe, is that the market has its own kind of cycles. So we, at the moment, we're seeing good profits coming into the banks, but in the same way, the banks have their own internal cycles. Many times it's like a pendulum. We've discussed this before. There's a lot of investment going into modernization and new initiatives, and then it goes to the other edge in its own momentum. And then for a while, the bank doesn't really invest in much of any new things, focusing on the core, and then it slowly starts to move to the other side as well. So again, different banks have different internal cycle positions in that sense, and then combining that with the macroeconomic situation, I think the result will be mixed. But overall, because the overall economy is doing well and the banks are doing good results, I think that should push it towards more new things as well in the future. And by the way, the banks will definitely need all that war chest looking at all of the regulatory activities that are coming down the line. We've been discussing that, some of those even in our podcast. But again, there is a tsunami of things coming from the European Union, especially here in the Nordics. And that's gonna require a lot of compliance work. But very good. So should we go into the individual news? All of us, as usual, have picked the our favorite news items from the list, and why don't we get started with that? So, Paul, what did you pick this week?
Lots of interesting stuff on the list that FinTech Farm have published in their latest Nordic highlights. I was trying to find something that would keep me on that continued trend of customer experiences and digital channel management and everything else that I've seemed to have picked up as my focus this year, but none of that. But I came across another one that I thought was interesting. Remember, Villa, when we were at the FinTech Summit in Helsinki, not last year, well, actually last year as well, but the year before, there was an explosion of cloud-native core banking providers that were there. I mean, everybody we spoke to were cloud-native core banking providers. A little bit less last year when we were there, but there is still an undertone of these, you know, new cloud-native core banking providers trying to grow. We're seeing some explosive success of some of them, but one that's caught my eye and again was in the news this time was Toom out of Estonia, which, you know, in the last couple of years has been quite quiet, but it's really exploding at the moment. And they've just picked up a new funding round, 25 million in euros, which I think is fantastic. Again, I mean, you could say the economy is coming up and therefore there's more money and the investors are getting more excited again, like you said, Jana. But I think for a market which is almost saturated by new modern core banking providers, seeing Toom getting 25 million is good. And they're going to use that money to branch out into new regions, new demographics. They're looking at the DACH region and Southern Europe and Middle East. I think the DACH region is interesting. Germany is a weird place to a certain degree when it comes to modernization of core. I mean, SAP is dominating an awful lot of, or SAP Fioneer is dominating an awful lot of the core banking area in Germany. So I wish Toom luck in that region. I know a lot of others have tried and failed, but good to see another, you know, Nordic, Baltic, fintech growing rapidly. So that's exciting and interesting from my perspective.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Again, there is definitely space in this area of the banking stack to develop. But that being said, we had an episode some time ago in our podcast about cloud exit. So again, when you actually have to really evaluate the value of using a public cloud infrastructure for critical parts of your own solution stack, and whether or not it makes sense, what do you guys think? Is there a kind of anti-cloud movement happening right now, and will it impact companies like Tulum?
I don't think it's an anti-cloud movement. I think it's a realization movement. Right. There was very early on, there was an assumption that going to public cloud was cheaper, it was easier, more flexible. It's definitely not cheaper. But I think we're seeing, particularly in the banking industry, there is a realignment to hybrid multi-cloud, which says you put the workloads where the workloads fit best. Now, if you go with a core provider that only runs an as a service capability which sits on public cloud, and they have to take that into consideration as to how you adopt that and move towards that as a core of your infrastructure. But if you actually look at a lot of these modern cloud native providers, they're not necessarily stating that you must run it in public cloud. They're just saying that they are based on a cloud native architecture, and as long as you deploy it in a cloud infrastructure, that can actually be on-premise. I mean, Thought Machine, as another example, have actually repeatedly deployed Thought Machine on-premise into a containerized environment. And I think most of the other cloud-native providers will do the same.
I agree. I think as with practically all new technologies, at first you will see everybody rushing in, doing all in on this new thing, which in this case was public cloud. And now there's a realization that yes, of course, there's some value in the way these applications get deployed in the cloud, but there are questions that you have to answer in a very clear and decisive way, which is basically, whose infrastructure are you running on, and who's paying for that? Many of these who went into the public cloud happily and very fast are learning that they need to draw back some of their things, because again, it's ultimately just not cost effective to do that. Janne, from your perspective, have you seen less talk about cloud, public versus private? How does it look like from your perspective?
Yeah, probably the biggest cloud cult has been quieting down or cooling down a little bit in the past couple of years. I don't know if people are turning down from cloud, or is it just becoming such a normal thing that you don't even have to mention it anymore. However, if you look at a traditional bank's IT costs, I don't think the price you pay for cloud is the biggest issue. They're probably willing to pay for that if it's otherwise like a good and flexible option. So yeah, price, I think it's only like one aspect what it comes to cloud. But yeah, generally regarding Tulum, I've seen they're being very active and quite successful. I just checked their customer portfolio through, and it's clearly still mostly like a bit more modern banks, Ferratum, LHV, it's major bank, but still quite modern from Estonia. So I'm eager to see if they go to Germany, for instance. So what kind of customers are they going to serve there? Is it mostly like sort of neobank kind of players, or are they also aiming for the old and traditional ones, or what's the drill there? And it's very interesting to see if they can really fit the needs of the more traditional ones, because that's obviously the largest market we have.
Yes, absolutely. I think what we've seen from the likes of Tulum is that it's a great way for new banks and digital banks to get fast time to market. We've yet to see any major movement in terms of not even to mention tier one, but even tier two, three banks that have legacy architecture to move into these modern stacks. we haven't seen those moves so far. But again, it is these things take a lot of time, and we will see how this moves forward.
I think what you could say, though, is there's a lot of tier one banks, tier two banks that are looking at more of a multi-core or multi-provider environment. You know, SEB with SEBX is a great example. Lloyds in the UK has done something similar. So that there's a number of banks that are, rather than looking at ripping out completely the old and replacing it with some sexy new cloud native capability, they're looking more at a coreless or multi-core solution. And I think we're going to see more of that. I think most banks have started to realize that you can't put all eggs in one basket and believe you're going to run one large core that covers everything.
Yeah. We had a wonderful conversation about SEBX and SEB Embedded. So I encourage you to go and listen to that episode if you want to hear very enthusiastic explanation on how everything worked out at SCB on that front. I personally find the way that they kind of spun out the SCB Embedded out of SCBX and restarted the entire SCBX on the side, I find that very fascinating way of doing things in a bank, in a multi-core environment, like you said. So again, go and listen to that episode. It's a lot of fun. So Janne, any comments on this multi-core strategy?
Yeah, actually, you mentioned the Nordic FinTech Summit. So last year, TUM was there, and OP Financial Group was presenting a case where they had been building like a whole new product, which was built on like from scratch on the TUM platform. So So that's an example of what Paul just mentioned. So you don't have to, you know, put everything there. You can have individual areas or projects running on different cores.
Yes, and here in the Nordics, another bank, of course, doing that is DNB in Norway. But okay, good. Let's move on. So Janne, what was the story you picked this week?
Yeah, so there was the news about Saxo Bank and MasterCard launching open banking payments for investment accounts. So Saxo provides the feature for their customers to top up their investment accounts through the open banking payments provided by MasterCard or is it Aiia, which is in the back, but they of course promote it as an easy instant way to top up money for the customers, and of course it's probably also for Saxo the cheapest way. And yeah, I mentioned there's been a lot of things on open banking payments account to account. This is one example. And actually, as a funny reference to this, I was topping my Nordnet account, similar case, and I noticed that they had the traditional real time payment transfer, which we have in Finland, the so-called pankkinappi thing, and next to that, they had the exactly the same feature, but it was done through Trustly. So from customer point of view, it's exactly the same. The other one just says Trustly. Why would a normal customer use that? It sounds like a, I don't know, new random thing. Of course, for Nordnet, that would be a cheaper option. But it's interesting to see, are they going to live in parallel or are they going to switch to Trustly, or what's the case here? So adapting the account to account payments, are they going to force it to the customers at some point? That's an interesting area. And also another news in this area was that Tink is also now, they have become an active part of the SPA SIM register the SEPA payment account access thing. So clearly account to account payments big thing, but I think it's interesting to see how they are going to make the consumers adapt it. What do you think?
I think, well, first of all, I have to say that Trustly, it has trust right there in the name, right?
Yeah, so of course.
Good start. But that being said, I think the core of the problem is exactly what you stated. Ultimately, it will be just a money transfer from your account. So the customer is really going to struggle to understand what is the difference and why should I pick one over the other. And ultimately, I think this kind of race down to zero in terms of cost and margins for the transactions is something that is perhaps interesting for the merchants, of course, and interesting for the banks to make sure, and the payment processors to make sure that they follow those trends. But for me as a consumer, again, it's just a debit from my account. How different can these things be? Perhaps there's differentiation in terms of how you authenticate the transaction. Some have this delegated strong customer authentication features built in. But again, even these are topics that are quite, let's say, different between different countries and different institutions, how they're implemented. And even the regulation is still upcoming when it comes to PSD3 and PSR. But Paul, do you care if who provides your account-to-account payment?
I think this discussion is fantastically interesting. And I we're going to end up down rabbit holes like we very often do. But I mean, if you look at everything that's going on at the moment, we've had these discussions repeatedly, and payments has ended up becoming a big focus discussion. Open banking, you know, account to account payments, etc. And you look at instant payment, you look at what we're doing with SEPA payments, you look at what's happening around open banking. It's no surprise that Visa and MasterCard are trying their utmost to get in and get connected as much as possible, because at the end of the day, we're talking about two totally different rails. We're talking about the card rails and we're talking about the payment rails. And if most people end up going towards purely account-to-account payment, which basically means that the use of credit and cards disappears, then there is no business anymore for Visa and MasterCard to a certain degree. So they want to be in that journey. There's an interesting debate here that says, you know, once we start getting truly into instant payment and people really start getting into account to account, then the card rails have very little value anymore as well. So how do the players like Visa and MasterCard manage to get in on the whole game of account to account payment? Well, they have to play in this open banking space. They have to do what they're doing. Should they continue to be using their card rails to do account-to-account payment? To me, that seems like convoluted and overbloated. But who knows? I mean, you know more about this to a certain degree, Villa, than I do. The other thing that makes me wonder is we know that the digital euro regulations that are slowly coming towards us, which, let's be honest, it's not a case of will they come or not come. It's a case of when will they come. We know it's going to happen eventually. Once that comes as well, it's almost going to create a larger divide for MasterCard and Visa to play in the European market. So I think Visa and MasterCard really do have to sit down and figure out how do they not disrupt, but find new ways of playing in what's happening at the moment, being driven by the regulators. So therefore, partnerships, fantastically important. And I think what they're doing is relevant. Will it be a successful thing for them going forwards? I partially hope so, but at the same time, it remains to be seen, right?
Yeah. The one thing that I always kind of wonder as a consumer myself is that why would anybody use account-to-account payments when you can use credit card? If you have the option to use a credit card, there's always some kind of bonuses and schemes and things like this to incentivize to use your credit card instead. And especially if you pay the full balance at the end of the month, you're not losing any interest money on those credit transactions either. The only one who ends up paying is the merchant. And then, of course, indirectly, you pay yourself because again, it will be in the prices. But since you're not able to affect that, why don't you take the benefit of the credit? Yes, Paul?
But there's a country and demographic element to this as well. Certain countries in Europe are very, very low users of credit. And most of them will actually use debit cards and therefore direct account payments. And I also think there's a generational thing here. I actually think that the instant payment trend is by default moving the younger generation to peer-to-peer account-to-account payments and moving them away from the credit business. In some ways, that's actually good because they don't build up credit, they don't build up debt. But at the same time, like you just said, there is benefits in using credit if you understand how to use and to use it for your advantage. So again, maybe there's a hidden here that back to Visa and MasterCard, I could say, we could give you account-to-account payment, but using credit capabilities or credit rails. Or maybe we're getting into buy now, pay later again, but it becomes send money to your friends now, pay later. I don't know, but it's an interesting discussion, right? There's definitely huge business and benefits in using credit cards if you understand how to use them correctly.
Yes, and we don't even have to get to the conversation about the credit scores. I mean, of course, in the US, this is a completely different game. And if you're not using credit cards, you're not building your credit score and so forth. In the Europe, we don't have credit scores to that extent. Again, differs by country, but we don't really have that level of credit scoring mechanisms as in the US, for instance. So again, that is another angle of why it makes sense to use credit in some cases. But the generational point you raise is interesting, because when I talk to my parents' generation, basically, they feel that using a credit card is almost like a sin. Like, you're borrowing money from somebody. Oh God, you know, we have to use direct money from the account, or preferably even cash. But then the following generation, including myself, is more lenient towards using credit cards, because we understand how they work, and we can avoid the costs for most parts, at least. Now if we're kind of swinging back to the debit and account to account in the following generations, it's an interesting kind of a wave that happens there. Janne, what do you think of these generational differences?
Yeah, like you said the same thing is quite a good reference for a special older generation in Finland. Also, the characteristic of Finland has been that the kind of banking up thing has been available for quite a while, and that's been an online payment thing using kind of account, but in a different manner, a different infrastructure for quite a while in Finland already. But in order to make people prioritize the account to account, so I don't know if someone is going to launch like a cashback program or something if you use the APIs, because that saves obviously money for the merchant. So interesting to see.
I think somebody will come up with interesting logics on top of account-to-account payments and new business models. We're yet to see those things. Maybe buy now, pay later is one way to kind of build these interesting mechanisms on top of that. But again, I feel there's a lot of innovation that needs to happen here in order to compete with the very versatile credit products that have been around for a very long time. Good, but hey, let's move on to my story, which actually also relates to card payments. So I picked my story, a new story on the Finnish fintech unicorn, question mark, but anyway, a very important Finnish fintech, Enfuse. So Enfuse provides card programs as a service. So again, if you are a provider of services and you want to have your own card program, you could go to a player like Enfuse, and they will create that card program for you, and they will manage those cards and take care of the full life cycle of everything you need. Now, this has been very much true in the European Union so far, where they hold an e-money license in Finland. They are able to provide the full stack of solutions for card programs with the e-money license in the European Union. But as we've seen lately, they've also been expanding into the United Kingdom. So in the UK, they've been partnering for BIN sponsorship so far, as in all other parts outside of EU where they don't have an e-money license. But the news that we saw now in February is that Enfuse has finally received an e-money license in the UK, which allows them to take a full, more control of the full payment stack for managing card programs. That's fantastic news, of course, for Enfuse, because again, it allows them to optimize the cost structure when it comes to managing card programs in the UK, because with your own license, you're able to do more with less complexity and less partnerships. So that streamlines that income stream from their perspective, also increases the level of trust that they have in the UK, because you are licensed in the local jurisdiction and you're able to operate as a standalone entity in these markets. The interesting broader point of this licensing game is that if we look at companies like Revolut, who also hold an e-money license in most jurisdictions where they are. They have a full banking license now in Lithuania, for instance. But As a user of Revolut, for example, when I'm here in Finland, I don't they don't have a Finnish IBAN number that I could use. That is a problem, because if you don't have a Finnish IBAN number, you also don't have access to things like paying invoices with the Finnish systems. You don't have access to the national kind of clearing systems that are necessary for you to do things, especially with local businesses. This means that Revolut, for example, again, has been starting to change their strategy, and they have been they're starting to open branch offices around Europe so that they can actually get these local IBAN numbers for their users. And again, proves the fact that even though you might be technically allowed to operate in a country, if you really want to grow your business as a fintech, as a licensed fintech in those countries where you are, you need to work with the local regulators. It's not enough that you have a broad license from somewhere abroad. You are able to reach certain niches, but you will hit the ceiling quite quickly when it comes to growth. And I think both Revolut and Enfuse are great examples of this, that they realize the fact that you have to be embedded in the local regulatory environment if you want to grow. So Paul, I mean, obviously you have a lot of roots in the UK. So how do you feel about the differences between the UK market and the European market now after Brexit?
We're not going to go there. We do not discuss politics on this podcast. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to talk. I'm not going to talk about Brexit and my personal opinions on that. But you know, the UK, when we look at payments, we look at cards, we look at the use of cash. I think the UK, particularly against us here in the Nordics, are a little bit behind. There's still more usage of cash there than we have, for instance, here in Finland. And I think we still see a lot more demand for physical cards in the UK than here in Finland. But back to the discussion of Enfuse and cards, It's an interesting business model when you can enable third parties to issue cards as well, right? Mm. So I think it almost goes back to the discussion we just had a minute ago. If everything ends up being completely digital and it becomes account to account, then how do the players like Enfuse continue to stay relevant?
Mm. That is a very interesting conversation that we absolutely need to have by having somebody from Enfuse maybe on as a guest in the future. So let's see if we can make that happen. But I think it's a good point. If Enfuse, for example, is a classic issuer processor now with licenses, of course, in the UK and the EU, again, providing card management as a service, if the card rails lose relevance, how will companies like Enfuse pivot? That is definitely a conversation that we need to have. Janne, what is your strategy for pivot for Enfuse?
Well, I don't think there's a need for a pivot soon. We three are here in this Nordic, open banking fishbowl, looking how account-to-account payments are progressing. But if you look at the big picture, so it's the trend is still that, people are moving from cash to cards, so that's at least for now quite a big area where there's clearly demand still for card payments. Of course, maybe some regions will jump over that phase, and there will be something in the future, but I still think card issuing is something which is ongoing for Enfuse. I'll let you say something soon, Paul, but I think with Enfuse, they have been probably riding a bit on the trend that we have new neobanks coming and maybe more new non-financial card issuers. But I can see also now they're shifting their own focus on more traditional financial institutions and then very big non-financial card issuers like British Petrol kind of, for instance, players who are then having millions of cards in the loop. So there's a plenty of market in that field. But yeah. Did you have something, Paul?
Yeah, Paul.
I did have something, but I think we're going down in a rabbit hole again because, because I mean, again, we're back to this discussion of what rails are you using for your payments, right? Mm. Is it the card rails? Is it the instant payment rails? Whatever. Secondly, when we're talking about card issuers, if everything goes to virtual cards and digital cards, one-time use cards, is that then, where is that issued from? Who is the card issuer? And what, again, what rails? Also, when we're talking about different parts of the world moving from cash to card, are they moving from cash to credit or are they moving from cash to debit cards? And if they're moving to debit cards, do you then need an MFuse or is the bank managing that? Again, do we end up in a virtual cards being run as account to account payment? Rabbit holes, right? I'm sorry.
I do want to make one more point, maybe to defend cards a little bit here. Maybe I'm showing my age, but I actually prefer a physical card. Now I realize when I look at my Revolut card that I have in my physical wallet, I have not used that a single time, not even once. But I still love to have it in my wallet. I love to be able to show the nice metal card that I have. So, and I somehow feel, because I'm a customer, I need that physical object in my wallet somehow. Again, this might be just me and my age thinking that this is somehow relevant, but there is one proof point that actually backs my point, which is that we just recently saw the German neobank Trade Republic release their new card program. And they had this very flashy mirror metal card that again, it looks fantastic and is linked directly into a Trade Republic account with all the kind of bells and whistles that you can imagine when you're able to use that card. But they were able to get over 1 million people to pre-register to be in line to get that card. Again, they were able to create some kind of fear of missing out phenomenon going on around that card. But that also speaks to the fact that people still want physical cards, especially when they look as fancy as a kind of a nice piece of metal that looks like a mirror. So again, I think this is an interesting topic that we need to discuss in much more detail.
You're showing your age again, Villa. You really are showing your age again. If I look at most people of my, you know, my teenage children age and even my younger brothers, they don't even carry a wallet anymore. Yeah, my brother carries his driving license in the cover of his phone, and that's the only physical card that he needs. Maybe here in Finland you need your Kela card and your driving license, but they don't want to carry cards. They've already got something they're carrying. They're carrying their mobile phone and they can load their cards onto their mobile phone and use Apple Pay or Google Pay or whatever the case is. Again, I also think that there's a demographical and regional differentiation here. I think maybe getting a, you know, FOMO approach out of people in Germany when it comes to cards is easier than maybe in the Nordics, because again, there is a higher usage of cash and therefore a connection to something physical and tangible in Germany versus what there is here in the Nordics. So, you know, I feel like this has been yet another episode where I've demonstrated some rabbit holes, but, you know, there we go.
But that's what we always want, right? What we call it, organic conversations. Okay, let's start to wrap it up. But before I do, Janne, do you have physical cards that you still use?
I don't use. I have them. And yeah, it was a bit disappointing when I got my Revolut metal card. It was really fancy. I wanted to show off with that, but then I realized that, you know, I don't need it. I used my phone, and I even got now the customized version of the metal card. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I have ever actually used it physically. But
well, same thing again. I have not used my Revolut metal card, not even a single time, for an actual payment. The only thing I do with it is it's just to, you know, have it in my pocket, really. But good. With enough conversation about physical cards, we will settle this conversation later with hopefully relevant guests to share this conversation with us. But before we close, Paul, Jan, did we miss something? Did we want to talk about something more?
I think we have covered all the interesting news from this month or last month. And no, nothing else.
Janne, final words?
Yeah, I could just remind that hopefully you're all coming, all the listeners are coming to the Nordic FinTech Summit on May 16th yeah, in a few months. So warmly welcome, and remember the Daydreaming discount code as well. So see you all there.
Great. And remember, the Nordic FinTech Summit has one of the best FinTech karaoke parties associated of the year associated with the event. So definitely catch us there. But good. Thank you for this. As again, time flies when you're having fun, and it's time to close this episode. As usual, you will be able to find us on fintechdaydreaming.com and all the usual podcast channels. Remember to subscribe on YouTube, hit the subscribe button, and hit the notifications on button, especially in YouTube. This helps us be more visible in people's YouTube streams and for people who are looking for fintech podcasts. With that being said, we will close today's episode. This has been Fintech Daydreaming.
This is FinTech Daydreaming.